As the NBA braces for the upcoming trade deadline, we've got you covered as we open up the mailbag to answer your questions on potential trades and what's the next step for the Miami Heat. Plus, the breakdown on the latest reporting on Kyle Lowry's status in Miami and Monday's news on the return of Omer Yurtseven. And all that and more on today's Locked On Heat.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily podcast on the Miami Heat. I'm Wes Goldberg here with David Ramil. However you might be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or your favorite podcast app, thank you for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. We're going to get to the news about Omer Yurtseven and some trade deadline updates here in a bit, but let's first start with this piece by Barry Jackson of the Miami Herald, who spoke to Kyle Lowry about the trade rumors and the fact that Lowry's numbers are basically down across the board. For reference, Kyle Lowry, less involved in the offense than any time since 2007. He's shooting less than any time since 2009. He's making 33% of his three-pointers, which is way low for a player who is 12th right now in the all-time NBA rankings of made three-pointers. Here's what Kyle Lowry told Barry Jackson. Quote, my shots are coming differently now. They're coming in different spots. I've got to find ways to be more effective and work on my part of the game to get my spot up three-point shooting better, end quote. David, what did you make of that quote before we get to some of the trade rumor stuff?
Not unlike anything that we've talked about on the show. I think you pointed out before that he's being utilized differently. And yeah, obviously his shooting needs to improve. So this isn't exactly breaking ground. If you've been listening to the show regularly, whenever we talk about Kyle Lowry, we pointed out the fact that he's being utilized differently in Miami's offense. That it's geared more towards the hero bam pick and roll with Jimmy Butler attacking in ISO situations, et cetera. So this isn't exactly groundbreaking. At the same time, good on Kyle for acknowledging it and publicly doing so. I think this is a big step he hasn't been lacking in self-awareness. If anything, I don't think Heat fans really care, but at the same time, I think of it as a positive that he recognizes, look, I'm being utilized differently. And that's fine. Like I think people expected the $30 million salary or roughly $30 million salary to come with command of the offense and everything else like that. But as other players have emerged, Kyle's had to take a step back by design, and I think that's exactly what he's doing.
Well, you mentioned good on Kyle Lowry for acknowledging this. I want to shout out Barry Jackson. Good on Barry Jackson.
Sure.
Going up to Kyle Lowry in the locker room. I think fans don't really recognize that this is kind of a difficult thing to do, this kind of reporting. You're in the middle of a game, post-game stuff. You're writing your recaps and all your other articles and stuff like that. So for Barry to actually go up to Kyle Lowry and do this, I thought it was on the nose, and I think it was important reporting. And so I do want to shout that out. And I do want to shout out Kyle Lowry for answering these questions. And look, you and I could sit here on a podcast and say, yeah, Kyle Lowry is being used more as a catch and shoot guy. The offense doesn't run through him as much anymore. And it's another thing to be vindicated almost in that, or validated, I should say.
Right.
In that,
right.
It, with Kyle Lowry basically saying the same thing, like that, it validates our observation. That's less important than the fact that it validates where the process that Miami Heat are trying to work through right now in trying to figure out where it is that Kyle Lowry is trying to get his shots and trying to get his offense. And so this right here, I think, is a very important quote. Even if it was obvious to everybody, it's important because it shows that there's an awareness on Kyle Lowry. There's an awareness upon the Miami Heat and Eric Spoelstra. Elsewhere in the article, right, Kyle Lowry basically repeats this, that Spo's getting on me, trying to help me get my shots and stuff like that. This is a in-progress kind of thing that's happening right now that we're seeing with Kyle Lowry. And if he's on the team long-term, right, because he's got another year left on his contract after this one, this is just something to monitor, and it's clearly something that the organization is working on right now.
Agreed. Well said. Listen, I don't think a lot of Heat fans might necessarily care about the different usage for Kyle Lowry. And I think that's part of the problem, right? And you have to think of it in terms of what this offense is trying to accomplish. They're trying to get Bam unlocked to another level, trying to get Tyler, both of which they've accomplished, like both of them putting up bigger numbers than they ever have at any point. Tyler starting, obviously, for the first time now, Bam being the player, the all NBA type player, which Kyle calls him in the article by Barry Jackson. He calls him an all NBA type season. And he's absolutely right. And part of that has been because of Kyle facilitating, taking that step back. Unfortunately, when he does have the opportunity to be more productive or put up big shots, numbers, et cetera, he hasn't been able to do so. Something else that Barry writes about in that same piece.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's one thing to be trying to figure it out. There is a level of, well, you know, I'm not used to getting all these catch and shoot type of attempts and stuff. And it's like, all right, I get it. You're still only shooting 33%. Like, you should be better. Like, in that respect, that, to me, that you could chalk that up to adjusting and it's in a new rhythm of the offense. No, like, you're an NBA player. You should be making the catch and shoot threes are the easy ones. It's the pull-up stuff and all that. That's the hard stuff. That's like that next level stuff. But like, these catch and shoot things, you should be able to making these shots. So definitely, I'm not like making excuses for Kyle Lowry here. I don't think anybody is. But the fact that there's an awareness there that there's something that's trying to work through at least should be a positive, right? I don't know who knows what the end game of this is. But this, to me, these quotes are reflective of a positive sort of thing. To talk about the trade rumors, Barry, again, credit to him, asked Kyle directly about it. And Kyle said the following, quote, "I've been in trade rumors before. I have a very nice contract that can be moved. The organization believes in me, and I'm glad to be here. I want to stay. I enjoy this place. I picked this place. I feel we have a chance to always compete for a title. With Jimmy, Bam, Tyler, and Spo as the coach, we always have an opportunity," end quote. What do you think about that quote?
Beautifully said. I mean, touching on a lot of the things that Heat fans want to believe about this organization. You have Jimmy, you have Bam, you have Eric Spoelstra and Tyler Hero emerging also as a big three, if you will. I think it's well said. I also feel for Kyle. I know a lot of fans don't care. Again, I think there's a problem there, but this is a family man, a person who's gone through some personal issues off the court. And at the same time, you know, being involved in trade rumors, when he says he doesn't care, that's a lie. Every NBA player cares. They are human beings. I've talked to a number of players about trades and things of that sort. I remember talking to a former Kyle Lowry teammate, Amir Johnson, finding out he got traded while he was shopping at the mall with his wife. And like seeing it come up on his phone at some point, or people starting to call him, not his agent, not the team, not his new team, nothing, telling him what had happened. And so this is the life of the NBA player. And a lot of fans will say, oh, who cares? They're paid handsomely. At the same time, that's true, yes, but you also have to consider the human element of this. And for Kyle to say, look, I don't care, I don't buy it, but he's saying the right things. He does believe in this team. And we do have to acknowledge he came here because he wanted to join Jimmy Butler. He wanted to join this organization. He wanted to win. He was expecting to come here the year before. We've all forgotten the timeline there, but there was that moment there right before the previous trade deadline where he thought the deal was going to get consummated, and it was not taken care of at the time. He wound up staying in that lost season when the Tampa Bay Raptors were playing there. He was miserable. He didn't wind up playing any. I don't recall him playing any other games after that trade deadline passed.
Basically, a wasted half season, and then it has to happen over the summer. Look, I'm with you, and we talk about sacrifice all the time in sports, and it's not a very nuanced conversation. We discuss it. You hear players, oh, I don't have to sacrifice, or I've sacrificed a lot and things like that. And I think a lot of that can be overstated. Like I was watching one broadcast of a Knicks game. I think it was Knicks 76ers or Knicks Nets or something like that. And one of the sideline reporters was talking about how Julius Randle has talked about, oh yeah, I've had to sacrifice a lot of my game. Like I can't take those long twos and I had to eliminate a lot of post-ups and stuff like that. I was
that's not a sacrifice, buddy. That's trying to help you.
Yeah, no, I was like, sacrifice is the wrong word. Improvement might be a better word here. But in regards to Kyle Lowry, I think there very much has been a sacrifice here. He knows what he's best at. He knows what his value add is to an organization, to a team on the court. And it's, let me run the offense and get guys in spots. And when he's no longer running that offense, there is a sacrifice there. It's okay. Now I have to figure out at age 37, what 36, whatever, how old, what it is that I could do well, how it is that I could be a value add to this team offensively. Defensively, all the stuff is still there. He's switchable. He's aging. He's not the defender he once was, but still we know that his role on defense has not changed, but he was brought here to organize the offense. He was brought here to do that. And he did for a year. And now the offense has gone in a different direction because of the leaps that Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo have made. And that's a good thing, big picture, for the Miami Heat. But for Kyle Lowry, it is certainly a sacrifice. But it's one reflected in these quotes that he's willing to make also. I mean, the other version of this is like Russell Westbrook being like, no, I'm not going to get off the bench. You know what I mean? Like, that's the other version.
Or Carmelo Anthony saying the same thing. Bench player. Like, well, yeah. I mean, we've seen this time and time again. Older players refusing to accept this. For Tyler to be complimentary. And again, the adrenaline of a post-game, you know, presser standing in his locker room as he's trying to put his shirt on and get dressed and get out of there and go off into the Friday night, go back home, and to be answering questions about other players and acknowledging, look, Tyler's been great. Jimmy's been great. Bam's been improving to an all-NBA level player, et cetera, et cetera. And saying, you know what? I've got to change. I've got to learn how to get them better. I've got to learn how to make them better and adjust and still make the most of my opportunities. That's huge. That is really, really and the other open thing too, and frank for
him. It is. And the other thing, too, when we talk about sacrifice, and I mentioned the on-the-court stuff, but the off-the-court stuff, too. You hit it on the nose. This trade rumors, whatever you – look – I don't really feel sympathy for NBA players being involved in trade rumors because I am like, you know what? It's not, you didn't just hear of the NBA. When you went into this as a profession, you knew that this was the business. And players will basically say, you know, this is the business. And I get that. It's a coping mechanism, but it does impact them. And for Kyle Lowry, he's now the guy in the trade rumors. We're what? Four, five months removed from it being Tyler Hero in every trade rumor. Tyler Hero is the guy at the center of the trade rumors. And then he signs that extension, which basically takes him off the board for the most part. But it's like players can't be involved in trade rumors just because of this poison pill provision for the next couple of months. But Kyle Lowry not only takes that step back on the court, ceding opportunity to Tyler Hero, but in doing so, takes Tyler off the trade market, basically. Like, there are no more trade rumors around Tyler Hero anymore. Right?
He acknowledges it too. He says, I've got a nice, big, fat, movable contract, right? Something like that. A nice,
I've got a very nice contract that can be moved. He's recognizing it and he's saying, all right, I'm going to take the step back on offense and all these trade rumors and everything, put them on my shoulders now. I'll be the guy in here. And who knows what ends up happening? Kyle Lowry might get traded. We don't know. The February 9th trade deadline is a week away. But the fact that Lowry's doing this is, to me, when we talk about sports sacrifice, this is actual real sports sacrifice, not the Julius Randle stuff where he doesn't get to take his long twos and crazy post-ups anymore.
Faux sacrifice, yeah.
We've got great news about Omer Yurtseven and where does he fit into the Heat's rotation when he returns. We'll get to that next. But first, David, tell the listeners about our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel. This year, the only app you need at your Super Bowl party is FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. We're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're their number one sportsbook in America, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better because they have so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. You can download FanDuel now so you can bet on Super Bowl 57 with a no-sweat first bet. You'll get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. FanDuel lets you bet on everything from the money line to point spreads to who will score a touchdown. FanDuel Sportsbook app is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Best of all, you can get paid your winnings instantly. So join FanDuel today at FanDuel.com/lockedon to claim your no-sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL.
Some good news regarding Omer Yurtseven. The Miami Herald reporting that his surgically repaired left ankle is fully healed and he's been cleared for high impact on court work. The hope is that he's going to make his season debut shortly after the All-Star break. So when we're talking about how big of a deal this is for the Miami Heat, just to background really quick, Omer Yurtseven has not played a game all year long. He underwent surgery on November 15th for what they called an impingement, bone spur, and stress reaction in his left ankle, an injury that he suffered in the preseason. Hasn't played yet this season, like I said. But even more backstory, let's go to training camp, where the Miami Heat were experimenting with Omer Yurtseven and Bam Adebayo as a front court duo. I don't think that they were ever going to start Omer Yurtseven, although there was some conversation about that.
He told us that. He deserved the starting spot.
He thought he could start, but definitely to me, and you're right, he did tell us that on Media Day. I always thought that was a second kind of look at the Heat we're going to get to. I always thought that they'd end up starting Caleb Martin, and that was going to be the case regardless of whether or not Omer Yurtseven is healthy. But to me, they just never were able to get that look. I thought that they could experiment with 4 to 5 minutes a half of Omer Yurtseven and Bam Adebayo together, where Bam moves over to the power forward spot and Omer Yurtseven's at center. They experimented with it in training camp. They worked on it. We saw it in preseason a little bit, how they would play off of each other. I remember asking Omer about it in the locker room after, and he went in great detail about the sort of rules and all these things that they had in place when those two guys were on the court in order to maximize their space and all that stuff. Okay. Rambling, but much to say, they were working on it and they thought it could work and it was something that they wanted to get to. Instead, they never got to that. And we've basically seen Bam Adebayo play five all season long and Miami just try to makeshift a defense that is really, really small. So with Yurtsevin back, do you think we could see maybe a too big lineup?
I don't know if that's, well, I mean, it, partly the way I think about it now is, you know, this is what he was able to work on last, right? He was able to last work on the idea of him playing alongside Bam. That was what they were going through more often than not in practice. So maybe that's what he's more comfortable rather than trying to change or adjust to something different. Although last year, obviously he played in, you know, instead of Bam, not alongside of Bam. So I think we could see some minutes there. I just wouldn't count on that being the norm. I just, right, considering what Miami does with their base defense package, they're not going to put Yurtsevin, expose him that way and have him switch as often and things of that sort. That's just not his strength. They're going to play more in drop coverage and that's just more effective. I think that would change a little bit. I mean, you could do a pseudo mix of that with him dropping and then Bam still being able to switch almost everything. It's just, I don't know if that's something you want to necessarily roll out in game 50 of the middle of the NBA season, right, like that. So I would say that's probably not going to be the case.
Just because they worked on it in training camp and in the preseason doesn't mean that it was ready to go. Like we saw it a little bit and it didn't really work. Like, right, it was really raw. It was
clunky. Yeah.
It was clunky. Good word. They needed that first half of the season to work through some of those issues. Now that we're in the final stretch here post All-Star break, when we're talking about Yurtsevin coming back, and by the way, he's going to have to knock off some rust and all these things. There'll probably be a minutes restriction. If you want this guy to switch, well, he's coming off of left ankle surgery. That's a lot of movement for a guy coming off of left ankle surgery. So that's probably not going to happen.
Well, he healed. The detail was that he was going to play after the All-Star break. That's what they mentioned.
The All-Star break was when he was going to make his debut. But you know, he's still going to be dealing with stuff even when he comes back onto the court. You never really wanted your switching. Like, he's not a switch defender. So there's looks that I'm sure they got to. I'm sure there's defensive packages and coverages that they got to where Yurt drops and then they're doing other things with the other four guys. And if Bam is this versatile, and he is this versatile, then I have no concerns about him playing the four and defending from that four spot. I have no concerns whatsoever. He's the best defender in the NBA, or at least one of them, and he'll be fine. That said, I do think it's a little late in the game to start rolling out the two big lineups a whole lot. Offensively, it was clunky. Defensively, are you gonna introduce this whole new coverage package just for Omer Yurtsevin, who's basically a backup center coming off of an injury at this point? That was a rhetorical question, in case that was not clear. The good thing here is that this also affects Orlando Robinson and Dwayne Dedmon. Orlando Robinson only has 11 games left under his two-way contract. If he plays every game, which he's been playing every game as Miami's backup center because Dedmon no longer is the backup center, that takes him until February 27th, which is right after the All-Star break. So all of this stuff conveniently lines up.
It's all happening. It's all happening. It's all aligning the way that they expected it to. That's just the way this team operates.
So this will help as insurance, not just behind Bam Adebayo, but behind Orlando Robinson, potentially, if for whatever reason you're not able to call him up and promote him onto the 15-man roster. The Heat are aggressively working to trade Dwayne Dedmon's contract, but we'll see if that happens. Like, we haven't talked about the Indiana Pacers extending Miles Turner, but that takes away a whole lot of Indiana's cap space. So I don't even know if that's a landing spot for Dwayne Dedmon if you're just trying to pay somebody to take a salary. It's basically just San Antonio that has enough cap space now, I believe. Like I said, I'm not a capologist, but I'm pretty sure the Spurs are the only team that have enough cap space to just absorb Dwayne Dedmon's salary altogether, which gives them all of the leverage over the Miami Heat. So we'll see if that even happens.
Thunder too, right?
This is really big. So the other thing too, at least on the court,
don't the Thunder have the cap space as well?
Oh, maybe they do too. So Miami, they're third in defensive rebounding rate. That's a good number. It's an impressive number. They work really hard to get to that number. Omer Yurtsevin will help that rebounding rate. What they're not great at, they're 18th in offensive rebounding rate, and Omer Yurtsevin is a very good offensive rebounder. So at least maybe, and boy, do we know there's a whole lot of offensive rebounds to be had for the Miami Heat because they miss a whole lot of shots. So if Omer Yurtsevin can clean some of those up, that could help the offense too.
Yeah, agree. I think the question everybody's asking now is like, okay, now that you've got Yurtseven back, does this impact Miami's goal when they approach the trade deadline? And I would say no, it does not. Like, that's not going to matter one bit to Miami in terms of what they're looking to acquire. If they can get, if they have to take on a center in order to facilitate a trade, or if they're going to target the best big man available, or another another front court partner, whether they play alongside Bam or in place of Bam or something along those lines, Omer Yurtseven is a placeholder. He is not the player that's going to keep you from making any kind of deal whatsoever. So I think you're going to look to trade Dwayne Dedmon. I would imagine Orlando Robinson's probably going to, unfortunately, wind up. I don't know. At this point, I can't see whether or not he gets added to the contract. It's going to have to shake out after the trade deadline. But I don't think Yurtseven is an obstacle to trading for a center or for a power forward or anything along those lines. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, or not. I don't. I'm with you. I don't think Yurtseven impacts you at all. I think it's an add after the All-Star break, which is an after the trade deadline, which would be helpful. Everybody matters at this point in the season. But you are always going to try to trade Dwayne Dedmon's contract in order to promote Orlando Robinson, with or without Omer Yurtseven in the picture. Like, just having one backup center is not enough anyway. So you want to have Orlando Robinson on the 15-man roster regardless. So you're going to try to trade Dwayne Dedmon. That's going to happen no matter what. The Heat were never really in the market for I know that there's been some conversation about Jared Vanderbilt, Naz Reid, and all that stuff. And maybe you could still go in that direction if you think that that's the future kind of a future contributor in your front court. Like, there's no reason not to go in that direction with or without Omer Yurtseven. I don't think, look, if we want to play like hypotheticals here, and if Omer Yurtseven had never gotten hurt and just like burst onto the scene in the first half and was awesome, yeah, maybe we don't have these questions right now in terms of who can pair along Bam Adebayo. Maybe in a different universe where he never got hurt, he makes this huge leap and he's actually the perfect front court partner with Bam Adebayo. The problem is we don't live in that universe. It never happened. And this is where the Heat are now. And you have no idea if that will ever happen with Omer Yurtseven. So whatever approach the Heat had going into this trade deadline is still the approach. You welcome Omer Yurtseven back. You welcome the help, but you don't change anything because you haven't seen him play yet. Talking about the trade deadline there coming up, how a deal with the Rockets could address two different needs for the Heat before the deadline. We'll tell you what it is next here on Locked On Heat. Reach Locked On Heat on Twitter, Instagram, email us, lockedonheat@gmail.com. This next question, we got a bunch of mailbag questions to get to from our email. So thanks again to everybody who sent those in. Again, lockedonheat@gmail.com. This one comes from Dylan. Hey guys, so the season going in the right direction, what do you think is the best move that the Heat can make at the trade deadline? If the Heat were going to go for a power forward, what would you guys think of going for Jonathan Isaac? I think he would fit great next to Bam, 6'11" at his peak, is very versatile defensively and can stretch the floor from three. David, you and I talked a little bit about Jonathan Isaac a while ago, but he's basically just making his return now. He's playing a few minutes, but he's not an every night guy yet. He's sort of kind of ramping back up. Basically hasn't played in 2 years. I agree with Dylan. I think at his peak, like theoretically, makes a lot of sense as a front court partner with Bam. But everything with Jonathan Isaac right now is theoretical, and I don't think the Heat would trade for Jonathan Isaac. I don't think anybody would trade for Jonathan Isaac. And by the way, I don't think the Orlando Magic are even shopping Jonathan Isaac right now, because I think they're still just trying to wait to see what this guy could be.
Absolutely. Look, there is a glut there. They have Wendell Carter Jr. They've got Franz Wagner. They've got enough players there that they didn't really need Jonathan Isaac. They got Paolo Banchero, obviously. I mean, there's a depth there. I'm sorry?
Obamba's there. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, he's the one that's out of the rotation. Yeah. So he is a trade target, but he's out of the rotation for a reason, everybody. Like, I know that everybody's tantalized by the idea of a 7'4" center that does shoot threes, but he's just not really an impactful player at this point. Maybe he can get coached up and developed in Miami, but Miami's looking to make a move that helps their chances this season. Jonathan Isaac isn't that player either. He's not at full strength. If he's not going to play every game, and he's still kind of figuring himself out as a player, then what's the point of making that deal unless you're already looking long-term? If that's the case, that's fine, but I still don't think Orlando's trading him. I agree with you 100%.
This is not the only fan base that's talking about Jonathan Isaac as a trade target, and where is this coming from? I don't, like, Orlando.
It's not. They just see the glut on the roster. Yeah.
I guess, but, like, Jonathan Isaac at his best, he's exactly what the Magic need. Like, everybody talks about a glut, but, like, you just said Mo Bamba's out. Mo Wagner fouls too much to stay in games. Wendell Carter Jr. is a really good center, but beyond that, they don't, like, I know they have Bol Bol, but he's not a five. He plays sort of four for them. Like Jonathan Isaac would kind of be that perfect, can play the four, can play the five when those other guys are in. Like he's sort of that perfect kind of glue guy there for them. So at his best, he's exactly what the Orlando Magic need. And they're not like they're not going to sell low on him when they think that when they're really in on his upside. So I don't understand why the Jonathan Isaac stuff is out there, because I have not heard anything from real reporters or anybody in the know that Isaac is on the trade block. So we appreciate the question. But like I said, like Mo Bamba, probably the more realistic target. His salary is non-guaranteed for next year. If you want to take a flyer on it, maybe.
Yeah.
But that to me is maybe more of an offseason thing or a buy low. And also when Mo Bamba, like the Heat don't have the salary to get up to $10 million, which is what Mo Bamba's making. So
listen, as far as real reporters are concerned, this talk about a tease. We'll be having Jake Fisher to talk about some potential trades in an upcoming episode. And we'll ask him if he's heard anything about Jonathan Isaac. So that's something to look forward to in the future.
David from Coral Springs.
Not me.
Shout out. Sorry. Not you. You're not from Coral Springs. Different David. I'm a huge.
There is more than one, I guess.
The only one from Coral Springs. I'm a huge Heat fan and just found Locked On Heat a few weeks ago, and I'm loving it. Thanks, David. You guys do an amazing job. Thank you, David. I'm very concerned about how far the Heat can go with Caleb Martin. He's incredible. It's just that the Heat are asking far too much of him as a starting four. He's constantly defending bigger players and often defending one of the other team's best players, and he does great. The huge problem at this point is that he clearly isn't close to 100% with that quad. How many times last year did we see Mount Caleb dunks where he was so explosive? Nothing like that this year at all. He can't possibly keep playing this way when he isn't healthy, and taking a game off or two isn't going to fix him. They have to make a move for a real four and keep Caleb to limited minutes off the bench with Kyle Lowry. Ooh, little side swipe on Kyle Lowry there coming off the bench. QB1 doesn't score, can't shoot, does blah, 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 blah. Spo seems to be losing patience with him at $30 million. Okay, I want to talk about the Caleb Martin stuff because we already did the Kyle Lowry thing. It's a good observation. And the dunk was not something that I had thought about. Although you and I have talked a lot about how the wear and tear is very clear on Caleb Martin. But just the specific amount of dunks, I went and investigated that after David from Coral Springs' email here. Caleb Martin had 36 dunks last year. He has 12 this year so far. He's on pace for 21. That is a big difference. 15 fewer dunks than last year is what Caleb Martin is on track for. I think there's something to this. It's something that I have talked about quite a bit in terms of the wear and tear on Caleb Martin. I think he's done a phenomenal job playing that four spot. But long term, you're not doing him any favors. And I agree. I think that he needed to go find a real bigger player to play this position in order to save Caleb Martin, who you just signed to a 3-year, $20 million contract.
I'm not worried necessarily about a long-term injury prognosis, but it just goes to show the game within the game, like the whole mental approach that Caleb took last year when he was he was on a two-way contract. We've all forgotten it because he was so impactful. But every time he was out on the floor during the first 50 games of the season, he was looking to kill somebody out there by dunking on them and showing this Heat team what an impact he could make while he was out there. I always talked about it with him during those games early on. He was memorable. You always remembered something from Caleb Martin. Like he came in here, nobody really knew who he was. I remember talking to you about him and said, I expect big things from him. Turned out to be true, but nothing that we had seen in the previous 2 years when he was with Charlotte, getting less playing time than his brother, would indicate that he was going to jump immediately and have this incredible impact. But he was really, really trying to show the Heat team that he deserved a long-term contract. He showed that effort. He was dunking on everybody, grabbing every rebound, pulling down loose balls, whatever possible to show, look, I can stay at the NBA. I can play at this high level, et cetera. But now he's got the contract. And it's not to say that he's trying less, but he's got to be a little bit more self-preserving. He can't kill people out there. He can't kill himself out there by just trying as hard.
You think that he's not dunking in order to preserve himself?
I think there's part of it is the injury. I think it's a huge exertion of energy having to defend bigger players. Right. I think we see him get to the rim, but more often than not, again, as the offense bogs down somewhat, we've seen, like we talked about this in the Orlando Magic game, the acrobatic layups and things of that sort. I've seen more circus shots from him this year than I have dunks. And I think that says a lot about where
I think it's more of a, I need to expend so much. Maybe you and I are saying the same thing. He's got to expend so much energy defensively, more than he had to last year, that, energy is it's a finite thing, right? He's got to expend so much of it defensively as opposed to last year that he doesn't have that extra gear to get to that as that Mount Caleb kind of dunk on offense. So that's it. And look, I do have an I am concerned with a 6'5" guy like Caleb Martin long term. Like the Heat, you have to protect your investments here, and they're invested in him for another 2 years after this one. The quad injury did really impact him offensively. It wasn't just the dunking; like we saw that 3-point shot just disappear basically when he was dealing with that quad. He has to work so hard defensively, and he is more at risk for those little soft tissue injuries and things like that, more so now than he was last year. So for a lot of reasons, the Heat need to go out and get a real power forward of the future. And that's no disrespect to Caleb Martin. He just doesn't play. He's not supposed to play that position. He is not a four as much.
He's trying his best.
He's doing a good job. The starting lineup is awesome with him in it. The defense is top five, and he's a big part of that. But long-term, they need to find a different solution. This is always, by the way, we're not breaking news here. Not even to the Miami Heat. They have always viewed Caleb Martin at the four as a short-term solution too. They never view it. They don't think Caleb Martin is the long-term four either. All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks again for making Locked On Heat your first listen every day. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Heat on your favorite podcast app and on YouTube. Ring the bell to get notified as soon as new episodes go up. Now make your second listen Game to Game NBA. Every moment, every top performance, every result, Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis that only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA, available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, wherever you get your podcast. David, thanks for joining me.
You got it, Wes.